Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Force Center, a show about Star Wars pop culture and the ultimate adventure, life itself. This is one of our Q's episode, Q's of the everything, Q's about Star Wars and whatever else you want to ask us. We can't wait to A your Q's. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I love A and the Q's. I'm Ken Napsa.
And now it makes me hungry for root beer. I think there's it's somewhere. It's like this combination of A&W and DQ and like... Summer and I want a hot dog.
It isn't summer. A&W. I don't think we don't have the A&W walk-in restaurants anymore. The fast food establishments around these parts. Oh, it's good memories. There was one in Fresno on the way to Yosemite. That's how positive of memory I remember it in the '80s.
I saw one near Sequoia National Park, and I almost pulled over. And we were both my wife and I were like, "There's got to be one closer." And like, no, not to my knowledge. Anyway, that's a little sample of the everything in questions of the everything. As always, I want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We are continuing to recommend Dark Disciple by Christy Golden. Ole Asajj Ventress is going to be popping up in Bad Batch Season 3 any moment now. We know some people have the screeners and they might know exactly when. We do not. But Asajj Ventress will be returning, we know. Dark Disciple is a great Asajj Ventress story. So if you're curious about it, if you want to listen to it, downloading it with our Force Center link helps us out a lot. So if you want to check it out, you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. One more time, at a reasonable speed, it's audibletrial.com/Force Center for your free audiobook. Ken, did you ever have like on like, I think it was like Captain Kangaroo or some other PBS show where like there was like a send a stamped self-addressed envelope to this and Captain Kangaroo. And I remember being like, slow the bleep. I was like five, like slow the bleep down, Captain Kangaroo. I can't write it down fast enough.
Yeah. No pausing the DVR at that point. Yeah, I do. It took me years to figure out what a self-addressed stamp envelope was. I thought it was an early version of AI. I couldn't, because that's how you get baseball autographs. You'd send it to like the team and can you get me Gary Carter's autograph? Here's a self-addressed stamp envelope. So, I'm with you.
Your ticket to the stars back in the day, a self-addressed stamped envelope. Anyway, we have Q's and A's and some of our A's, we have multiple A's, are asks. Or announcements, or announcing asks. We want to continue to promote the wonderful Jedi Beat as we're recording. It just dropped. Jennifer Landa's NPR Meets Star Wars YouTube series is got it going for 5 weeks. We'll see what kind of future can happen for it. But a new episode just dropped this week, all about Marsha Lucas. I watched the first 5 minutes, and then I had to stop to record this episode of Force Center, so I can't wait to listen. Ken, have you had a chance to watch it all the way through?
I was about 25 minutes in when I was like, oh, Joseph's probably waiting for me. I got to go. and again, this is a wonderful series that Jen has taken some previously published podcast episodes. We launched Force Center in 2015. Jedi Beat was a little bit after, early 2016 is when that started. But she has reworked them, and it's fun to just revisit them, even if you're a longtime listener. But for a lot of people, it's new, and there's new information. And I love seeing the comments of people going, I thought I knew Star Wars, but there's things in here I've never heard before, which was the case, and including pictures. Jen is great with research, too. So it's long been some of my favorite stuff we put out here as a collective channel. But now you can enjoy it on YouTube.
Yep. And you are not alone. There was a comment that came in this morning of, I like this the best, which is great. we also want to talk about our patron goal. You want to grab that one, Ken?
I do. We are asking politely, humbly, graciously to have you consider supporting us on Patreon. It's a great way to support the show in an ever-changing digital media economy. You can go to patreon.com/Force Center, and we have a little bit of a goal challenge going right now. When we hit 400 paid supporters, because patrons changed the game a little bit, there's public and paid supporters. When we hit 400 paid, we are going to start a new reinvigorated commentary series. We've done commentaries before, but we might revisit even those movies that we covered before. We are going to do it. But if we hit 400, you will help us decide which one of the movies will start this series. We got there. And then the way Patreon works, you kind of slide back sometimes at the beginning of the month. Totally part of the process. We get it. But we're still looking at that. Also, we have on Patreon 007 Center. We launched that last month. Excuse me, I'm getting emotional over it. Casino Royale was so good. It's in our shop tab for anyone who just wants to swing through and get the episode. It's also available to all Patreon supporters. It is an audio and or video version. Check it out there. 007 Center and Quantum of Solace will be on the way in late March. And get into our Discord from the Patreon page as well and discuss like Bad Batch, a wonderful, robust conversation going all the time about Star Wars in our Discord. There you go.
Yeah, I can't wait. Well done. I can't wait to discuss Quantum of Solace. I reread. I was so excited. And like, we can't talk about it yet. I can't watch it yet because we got to schedule it for later. But I was so excited. I reread the short story where the title Quantum of Solace comes from. It doesn't even have anything to do with the movie. But I want to be able to talk about the short story, too. Can't wait.
Love that. Love that. No, I can't wait. Getting to discuss Quantum of Solace, like I've mentioned before, is you had said some things about that movie, and I was like, yeah, I agree, and I love it, and I want to discuss it. So I'm so excited to actually get to it.
Yeah, we'll be covering it all, including the gif of the guy who isn't really brushing the sidewalk. All of it will be covered. We always like to talk life or Star Wars adventures. Ken, how was your week? Did Star Wars find you in any way?
It's been going good, busy, a lot of Bad Batch. So that kind of becomes the Star Wars adventure, obviously, as we cover that each week on the Bad Batch Report. But part of my Star Wars adventure is the connections we've made over the years being Star Wars fans and people in the Star Wars punditry space. I want to shout out a birthday yesterday at the time of the release of this episode of our good friend Alex Damon. Of course, one half behind the wonderful YouTube channel Star Wars Explained. We had the pleasure of meeting Alex years ago. Now, I think 2017 Orlando's when I first met him, and then you and I, when we used to record at your apartment, we had Alex and Molly over the first time shortly after or around that time. So happy birthday, Alex. And I promised him in a text, I said I was going to give you a sappy tribute, Alex. And I'll say this, in a punditry space that is so driven and dominated by the troubling, angry, and at times problematic personalities, Alex has remained, along with Molly, just a warm, supportive, encouraging center of the Star Wars fandom and punditry world. And it's always been appreciated. He has changed, too. He has grown. He has leaned into his appreciation and understanding of Star Wars beyond just stats and figures and numbers. But that remains, too, as an impressive part of his makeup. And Alex is absolutely as everything you think he is off air is true. He is just such a wonderful human being, one of our favorites, despite him loving Biggs as much as he does. So happy birthday, Alex.
Yeah, a true Jedi of broadcasting. Love watching his episode reviews that are so clear, so crisp, so honest about what did or didn't work for him and how he was thrilled or how he was challenged, but always so even and honest and full of wisdom, both the actual knowledge, the knowledge and the wisdom. He certainly has the Star Wars knowledge and then so much Star Wars wisdom in the way he talks about it. There's also, I keep meaning to text him. There's like a big travel camper that is sometimes parks in my neighborhood that is, I think it's pretty old, but it's clearly the brand and it's called Damon by Daybreak. And every time I walk by it, I'm like, that man needs to make a cologne. It's Damon by Daybreak. Just gets out of bed fresh and ready to go.
The scent for emo souls everywhere. Damon by Daybreak.
Anyway, that's our episode of Alex Explained. We'll be starting a new series soon. Happy birthday, Alex. For myself, life is, we were talking before that we started recording, is just juggling a lot of stress, lots of frustrations at, you know, fractured communication in community and everything going on. So I was realizing I was having some moments this week where Star Wars just kind of brought me a nice little bit of peace. A little bit of a break or a little bit of centering, which I really needed. And I was like, there's some Star Wars memory. There's something that made me really happy this week. What was it? And then I realized what it was is, I believe, Jennifer's first episode of Jedi Beat. A detail that I had never heard is that the super weirdo alien that Luke sells the speeder to, Weoslia, it was designed by George on just sort of like a cocktail napkin kind of quick drawing. And they're like, okay, we'll try to make this cloud of eyes and tentacles to make it look okay. Like, what if the football that Lucy pulls away from Charlie Brown also has eyes and weird fronds? Okay, we'll try to make that for you, George. And someone had posted that Weoslia was like one of their favorites. They had the action figure, everything. And I just became overwhelmed with the desire to own my own Weoslia. So I've been like one of my daily rituals is looking at the action figure on eBay and seeing if it's coming down in price.
Oh God. Yeah.
Cause I need it.
Yeah. Yeah. Save up all your birthday and Christmas money and allowance money. Get that for yourself. You deserve it.
I got a hunger for that weirdo. All right. Those are our life and Star Wars adventures. We are ready to dive into the titular cues, the questions that come from our patrons on Patreon. This comes to us from Robert Meadows. Robert says, greetings all. Samuel L. Jackson has once again stated that Mace Windu is still alive and that he would love to return to Star Wars. What do you all think? Do you want Mace to come back or should he stay dead? I'm honestly split. On one hand, I think Mace should stay dead as his death was big for the transformation of Anakin into Vader. Plus, I don't really want a fake-out death. On the other hand, Samuel Jackson is a phenomenal actor, and I feel like he used some different kind of acting chops in Star Wars, ones we don't get to see often with him, and he's very enthusiastic about the character and his willingness to return. Ultimately, though, I think he should stay dead. I wouldn't mind, however, seeing a Mace show set during the prequel era, either between episodes 1 and 2 or during the Clone Wars. The de-aging for Samuel L. Jackson in the Captain Marvel and Secret Invasion is some of the best de-aging I've seen, so it could work. Boy, that was just a great roller coaster through the Mace Windu soul of Robert Meadows of, I want it, I don't want it, but I do want it, but I don't want it, but the de-aging. So thank you, Robert, for this great question and for sharing your thoughts about it, because I think they mirror probably some of mine. I think I am on a twisty roller coaster of thoughts and feelings about more Mace Windu in live action. Where are you at, Ken? Where do you go with this?
I'm kind of right there with you. I'm kind of right there with you and Robert. There's this roller coaster is a ride I'm on myself. The safety bar is pulled down. I start with this. I want Mace to be dead. I think he's dead. I'm totally up for characters coming back and exploring it. We are on the cusp of trying to see what they may have done with Asajj Ventress and, of course, the great example of Maul, all that kind of stuff. I am okay. I feel that if they were to do it, there'd be a great why behind Mace coming back. But I just think that's one of the great deaths in Star Wars. I think it's important. But what puts the brakes on that for me is kind of what Robert's talking about. Sam Jackson's enthusiasm for the character and enthusiasm for coming back. And this kind of like, wait, they kept going with Star Wars? I want back in. And my guy's alive. My dude's alive. Bring me back. And I love the character of Mace. I love talking about him and exploring his what might be right, what he saw coming, and what he did wrong. And there's a lot that he's done in all three of those categories and more. So he begs exploration. I know the Mark Bernardin scripted Mace comic series is out. I enjoyed the first one that they did with some flashbacks to young Mace, which really helps you understand the character and who he is by the time of his final moments in Revenge of the Sith. So there's a lot to explore. More to talk about. I'll pitch it back to you, but I am confused emotionally, and there's some ways out of this that Robert's talked about we can discuss. But at the end of the day, right now, I start with dead, dead, dead.
I too am emotionally confused by Mace Windu, and we should start a support group, or rather, the life and the death of Mace Windu. One thing I want to shout out just right away, since you mentioned it, there are some great Mace comics. I have read that earlier run of 5 issues. I haven't read the most recent one, but also it's one of the big publishing announcements that you know we haven't talked about as much. Is in August, there's a new Mace Windu book coming out called Mace Windu: The Glass Abyss.
Right.
It's written by Stephen Barnes, who I'm not familiar with, but it was a writer for Legends. So I think that should excite a lot of fans who love that era of storytelling. Here's the synopsis. Jedi Master Mace Windu travels to a dangerous remote planet on a mission that challenges even his deadly prowess, all to fulfill Qui-Gon's last request. Basically, after Qui-Gon dies, Mace Windu finds a message where he's like, hey, if anything happens to me, will you please get out of the Jedi Temple and help these people who truly deserve the Jedi's help? And it's Mace wrestling with all that. So I share that in case people haven't heard about it, because there is a lot of great Mace storytelling. So I feel in that sort of Star Wars question of this character deserves more storytelling, Mace is getting some good love and some good storytelling and great Mace action figures out there. So like Mace is a character I feel is kind of being served more than some characters. But there's this very specific live action thing going on with him. And I want to own that. I've said this about Kenobi, is that I want more Kenobi storytelling because I love the character and I think there's room for storytelling. But there's also this very real world pressure of Ewan McGregor is the age he is now, and the window's not going to be open forever to tell this story. So I really, really understand the people who love Mace with all their hearts. Maybe people have a Mace tattoo and are like, but Samuel L. Jackson is right there.
Yeah.
We need this in the can. We need this for the ages. Let's get some more live action Mace Windu. That pulls at me, but my knee-jerk reaction is Mace is gone.
Yeah.
And I think it's because of what you're talking about, what Robert is talking about, of that death is so, it's not just the characters failure, because I think it is a failure. I think it is the culmination of mistakes of the Jedi Order, of made only more interesting by some of the choices that Mace makes in the Clone Wars animated series, where he's really worried about how people will look at and think about the Jedi, and he lets Tarkin and the Senate push the Jedi around and do things that would normally be under the Jedi's purview, like with the Ahsoka trial. And it feels like he gets that moment where it's like, I have not responded forcefully enough to the problems. And now that there's no question, there's no choice but to kill him. He's got to go.
Yeah.
You know, right. There's so much great what if Shakespearean tragedy in that moment. And Mace being this sort of like this fervent believer in the Jedi Order to the point of, I think, rigidity. And then also being this person of just great prowess and skill. Like, I know some people think Palpatine faked losing. I really like the story of like, no, Mace is great. And he beat him.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a question of who's more powerful. It was a question of choices and manipulation. Mm-hmm. And Mace left this big opening for Anakin to be manipulated by needing to take him out right then and there. All of that stuff to me just feels like it's fascinating stuff about the character Mace, but then the death becomes like, that is the death of this Jedi Order. And that's what makes it really sort of powerful to me, of like that sigh. That sigh of Palpatine's is like, yeah, maybe I got some more to clean up. Yoda might be a problem, whatever. But Mace flying out that window was the moment the Jedi Order died. And the last bar was cleared.
I really agree with you on that interpretation of that moment. And not counting, you know, some George quote from a coffee table book about here's exactly what he did. It just, I think, tracks thematically. And I'm with you, too. I'm in the side of, without a doubt, Palpatine probably engineered the situation or had several that he might have been prepared to play. If I can, you know, it's Palpatine's gambit. Let me get Anakin trapped in this kind of moral dilemma. For my money, I choose to believe and like the idea that, yeah. And then Mace started to kick your ass, man. And the unlimited power that Palpatine craves is also built on a lie and also built on he needed Anakin in this moment. But he's going to sell it as himself. Palpatine would probably tell you, oh, I let him win, right? I let him win. We see that a lot. Oh, they won that primary. I let them win that one. I let them win that primary because it's the DC swamp that voted for them. You've seen this kind of thing where the sorry, is it too real and current event of this morning? And so that's why what you're talking about, Mace is a complicated character because he is to be respected. He is to be listened to. But there's so many moments along the way where he chose, I think, poorly on some of the ways to handle it. And you talk about being too rigid. I think, yeah, he didn't change. He didn't adapt when maybe he should have, even though he started and had some, you know, good points and was probably right about a lot of things. So yeah, him falling out of the window and that being the death of Jedi Order. I'm right there with you. Love that idea. I think you're right to say that. So I don't know if we have any Mace actually lost truthers out there, but I would stand in opposition to that.
I think there are people who definitely have the opinion that Palpatine threw the fight, and I think that's a fine way to look at it as well. So I'm not arguing what is truth. I'm sharing my own interpretation, what I like. I love the idea that Palpatine truly did lose because it gives Mace such power. Yeah. I think the other element that I want to be sure to talk about is, look, by the pulp rules of Star Wars, could Mace Windu be alive? Of course.
Of course.
Look, hey, in any sort of pulp or genre storytelling, if you fall and there is not a close up of your heart being pierced by a spire and then slow dissolve as your body rots and then your bones are smashed and burnt, like,
yeah,
of course he could survive. Of course he could.
Of course.
Well, he lost an arm. He got electrocuted a lot. He fell from a very high place. He might have maybe hit a couple things on the way down.
Yeah.
He could be fine. So I'm not coming at this from the point of like, yeah, it's unrealistic. Like, it's,
yeah,
it's
right. Yeah. Well, no,
storytelling. Yeah. He got hit by lightning from an evil wizard's danger fingers. He could survive, you know? Yeah. Absolutely. I got no beef with that. It's about the themes and the ideas.
Yeah, he Homer Simpsoned all the way down to the bottom. I totally get it. And there'd be more, you know, in the mall of it all. We understand that, you know, there's more pretty solid deaths on screen that have been pushed past. So, look, I'm still a Phasma truther, you know? Somewhere.
Come on. Yeah. She fell into ambiguous flames. Come on. She's alive. She's absolutely alive.
Ambiguous flames. Is that a Guns N' Roses song we didn't get?
It's amazing. Oh my God. The songs they've been putting out lately. Yeah, absolutely. which I like those songs. I stood up for them at Hollywood Bowl and I was alone. Anyway. But you and I are both compelled by the, but if it got announced that Samuel Jackson was doing some sort of live action film or a series, neither you or I would be flipping the table in anger. We'd be like, yeah, okay, not our first choice, but screw it. It's Samuel Jackson and Mace Windu. Awesome. What would your hopes or dreams be out of him, of a new Mace Windu story with Samuel Jackson?
Yeah, I think it could be around the time of Revenge of the Sith leading into it, right? We've got some great, even Clone Wars Season 7 did some great around the corner. This conversation happened with Ahsoka and Mace, and it was solid stuff, I thought, that could be explored. And there's that 10-year gap between episode 1 and 2 with a lot of storytelling to be had. And I think even if beyond a series, I put out the idea of you know, we got more Ahsoka coming, and I don't know, between the world, between worlds, or flashbacks, or those weird mystical things. Mm. You know, if he had shown up even in Ahsoka season one during the Clone Wars stuff, and it had been a de-aged Sam Jackson, I agree, he's got some of the best de-aging out there, probably because he's so cool himself. He just looks good no matter what you put on him and what computer program you run over his head, and it would have worked, right? If Filoni had found reason and wanted to and it had a good why, it would have worked. And that's maybe more of my hope than even a show or series.
So like an appearance sort of a dream quest, with Ahsoka season two, like exploring Mortis, not even a world between worlds of like, she literally travels back, but look at some of the great dreamy, trippy stuff that Yoda went through in the Clone Wars where—
Yes.
There's no perception that it's the real character. It's just the person on some sort of kind of vision quest experiencing things, you know, Ahsoka coming even more to terms with what the Jedi Order was and how he treated her, a Mace Windu appearance that isn't even necessarily the character in reality, but is a part of Ahsoka's vision and processing would be fascinating.
Yeah. And I would want to, I'll say this carefully, more meatier than even like Liam Neeson's return as Qui-Gon, which is this wonderful emotional beat we knew the show was kind of building to in Kenobi. And I hope there's a more Kenobi storytelling. And I'm with you on that. And that Qui-Gon would have a part of that. But that had that image. That had the energy of like, this is awesome. And Liam's like, I don't know. I didn't know Star Wars was still going, but I'll show up there and sounds cool. And I like what we did back in 99. That's a special kind of energy. It's a Liam Neeson energy to the whole thing where Sam Jackson's like, no, I ain't done eating. I'm going to this dinner.
Yeah. and I want to do the light lights again too.
Yeah.
I hadn't really thought about it. I'd been thinking so much about like a Mace Windu project, but yeah, it would be great to just see him on screen, in a role in a show. That would be amazing. The other thing that I would be excited about is, something that is a not even him at bookends, but Mace at different ages. So you get Samuel Jackson thinking and reflecting on different times in his life. And you like those great comic books, have a younger Mace and that. my sort of jokey pitch is if I had the opportunity to actually pitch, which anyway, but it'd be Mace Windu : thoughts while dying, and you'd have a shot of Mace falling, and he would be reflecting on his life and his choices, and he would that led him there, and what he would do if he could survive this fall. But it would all be in. It would all be a 6-episode, one season event. of Mace Windu trying to make peace with his life before he hits the ground.
Look, this is I'll call this for the love of the game pitch, the somewhat underrated Costner baseball film from about 15 years ago where he's pitching a perfect game and he flashes back on his life, inning by inning. So This is it, for the love of the Mace.
Yep, for the love of the Mace. And I know we've talked about this before, but I want to get your check on it. The single thing that I'm most interested about in a Mace Windu survived story is I think that he would have a different attitude toward what's next than Yoda and Kenobi, who feel great pain and feel like we need to take a deep breath and exile ourselves and think about how we failed while watching over the next generation and preparing for what's next. Yeah. I just don't know that Mace is like, let me go reflect. Mm-hmm. I feel like if Mace survived, as soon as he is back on his feet, whether they are mechanical feet or real feet, I think there's a fascinating story of he turned to the dark side and he was broken by the Inquisitors, that he turned to his own personal dark side and said, not waiting for nothing. I'm going to go on a death march through the Empire and they need to die and losing himself, you know?
This series starts with him tumbling, falling, free falling through the air. Tom Petty's Free Falling plays. We'll get the rights to it. And he comes to a crash in a speeder driven by Quinlan Voss. And he lands and he just goes, let's go get him. And that's the start of the series.
Exactly. It's the Kill Sheev revenge movie.
I have a very particular set of skills, which I know is a Liam Neeson project, but.
Mason. Yep. That's it. I am fascinated by that. So, because as always for me, it's we'd love to see him again. It's the why. It's the what can we understand about the character? What can we understand about the era? What can we understand about the moral ideas of Star Wars by telling this story?
And agree with that.
A lot of interesting stuff there. Any other thoughts for you on the potential return of Mace Windu?
The fact that we're even talking about it, the fact that we even have Samuel L. Jackson demanding to be in it is a victory for the prequel generation as well in the prequel films. I'm happy to be discussing it 25 years later.
Yeah, me too. Final thing I'll say is just like, I know lots of people have real strong opinions about Mace Windu. I know a lot of people love him. And as always, we just want to be clear that the things we're sharing are our opinions, our takes, our interpretations. We recognize that lots of people have different strong feelings and we are always excited to hear other people's takes as well. But those are our Mace takes. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in just a moment with another great question of the Everything Back.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we are back. We talked some great Star Wars, and now we're going to talk some, we'll see how Star Wars gets introduced to this, but some really good and very real and perhaps funny, perhaps painful real life that comes to us from Brian Babcock. Brian says, "Hello, Force Center and other Center friends. Recently, I was talking to my coworkers. I'm the oldest in my particular group by at least a decade, about when my school introduced my class to this new fancy thing called the internet. I was in the fifth grade, so it would have been around 1996. The computers we got to use were Macintosh Pluses with the floppy disk drive and a black and white screen the size of my smartwatch. I still remember the reading off a sheet of paper instructing us how to type in a URL, and the whole time I was rolling my eyes thinking, this is so pointless. Who has any use for this? We also had to learn the Almena typing method. Again, I scoffed at it because of course I was never going to use a computer at home. As I told this story, my coworkers looked at me as if I was an elder, speaking of the before time in the long, long ago. I really started to feel my age. Anyways, all that led up to ask if you remember when you were first introduced to that newfangled internet contraption and what was your experience and reaction. As always, thanks for reading, and may the World Wide Web be with you and also with you, Brian. Ken, where do you go on this? How does it make you feel when a person younger than you starts talking about feeling old?
Yeah, it does. I run into this a lot on my news show with Alda Diaz. Anytime he has, I get it. I was like that too. He has that. Oh, I turned 28. I'm getting older, and I'm like, got it. I have gray hair on my beard, older than you. But it's natural. It happens. You and I both have friends who are older than us who are always like, are you afraid of 50? Come on now. It's just the way of it. But yeah, this is funny. This is hilarious. And look, I even have trouble remembering life before the internet. That's how long it's been. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, no, it is something that I think so fundamentally reshaped our life on so many different levels that it is hard to remember when it was, not there, when it was not a part of things,
Yeah.
So do you remember then what your first hearing of the internet was?
I do, and I was, as you were talking, I was typing up to make sure I remembered some of the names right. Yeah, there was an AT&T-owned service called Prodigy that actually went to 2001, I'm reading right now, began about 1984, and that is the very first time I heard of anything like this. My friends Eric and Nathan, who I grew up with, I'd spend summers at their house. My mom was working, and I'd go there in the summer, and I remember they had an Apple II. Macintosh Apple II there. Their dad, Curtis, sat me, all of us down, and brought up an 84, 85, I don't know exactly when, to be honest. Could even be as late as 86. But sat us all down, and he brought up a baseball box score of a game that was happening right now. And he was on this service called Prodigy. And he didn't say it's the internet, but he's like, it's this thing. It's connected. And, you know, over my head, I was just like, this baseball game's updating live. What do you mean? Because I have to get the newspaper tomorrow or go to Sports Center tonight. And I was like 9 or 10. It was around that time. And I just – and then I didn't – and then they had it. It was kind of the thing. And then it wasn't until, you know, the World Wide Web shows up. And mm-hmm. I remember even the Spin Doctors have a song, All This Will Be a Road, which is off, I think, their 1994 album, which is about – the information superhighway, like that's mm-hmm. so it returns around that point in my life. But I do remember that day. I was just like blown away about how is this computer telling me what's happening right now?
The computers are talking to one another. You see, and then yeah. and somehow,
Wally Backman just grounded out. What?
What is a box score? How is that different than just a normal score?
Box score is like in the newspapers. It's just how you keep score of the game. Yeah,
okay,
so player went 1-for-4, everything, but it was updating live.
As it happened.
And passed it back to you. But then later on, when it all started happening on these phone things, my friend Jay, we were in a movie theater in Pasadena, and he had his phone. He's like, look at this. And we're in the same fantasy baseball league together. And he's like, look at that. You know, Erickson's pitching here. He's in the second. I was like, whoa, wait, it's on your phone now? The internet's on your phone now? What are we doing here?
So from your perspective, Al Gore built a device to learn more about baseball fast.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Indeed.
Joking about the whole Al Gore claiming to. Anyway, I don't know the whole history of that, so I'm not going to say another damn thing about it. I first heard of email, I think, mm-hmm. even before like the internet is a separate thing. Yeah, right. I had a friend who is also I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. We were friends who were sometimes almost maybe going to date, but it never really happened. And there was some on again, off again, mm-hmm. pretty much off, but definitely like young me working through some stuff, kind of mm-hmm. relationship. And she had gone to, college outside of Minnesota where I lived. And I was going to the University of Minnesota, but her father worked at the University of Minnesota. And she was like, well, we could email. And I was like, I'm typing you letters on my actual 1940 L.C. Smith typewriter, not a word processor, an actual typewriter that I bought for like $15. They're like $50 now at a used store.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's real cool. Anyway, she's like, no, you just got to try this email. Like, I didn't have a computer at home. She's like, my dad's going to tell you how to do it. So her dad literally wrote down on a piece of paper these sort of what seemed to be at the time incredibly elaborate instructions began with physically on the campus of the University of Minnesota. Here is where the computer lab is. And it was like at that point, it was like the Hitchhiker's Guide of like, this is where the notification that your house is going to be bulldozed. This is where it is.
This is where it is.
You got to find this obscure building. Then you got to twist through these dark, dank tunnels. And then you will find the computer lab. So I go to the computer lab. At this point, it was the University of Minnesota was assigning people email. So I allegedly had email. But I knew nothing about how to access it. So I follow all these prompts and it just doesn't work. I try to log in and it claims the computer is somehow like claiming both my email address exists and it doesn't. And, you know, and I ask the guy there monitoring the lab and he's like, I don't know. And I was just like, in the time I did this, I could have typed you three letters. Why the hell? Like, so I had a really bad attitude about it. And around the same time, my first paper in college ever was, I can't remember why, it was a sociology class and it was something about like how people are affected by new technology. And I got like a B- because it was basically just an angry rant about email. And I think it was informed by all that. I found the paper. It's really, really funny.
You know? Put that in the Hall of Fame, the scripture. It's really,
really, I was like, it starts like way too melodramatically. And I got dinged for that. Of like, you know, this isn't a creative writing class, right? I think like the first line was something like, writing high atop the wave of the tsunami of new impersonal technology sits email at the top of the crest. I can't remember what actual sociology point I made, but I remember a lot of it was about like, you can't smell an email.
You can't perfume it. You can't write a love letter.
Perfume an email. So I had lots of like reasons to resist it. That was my first encounter with it. And then I want to talk more about how I warmed to it and understood its power. But I'm curious, did you have resistance or was it always just like a, this is awesome thing?
No, this is why when you and I talk about change and the lessons of change in Star Wars and we come from a real learned point of view of I'm not always quick to adapt. I have a very strong stubborn streak. I have an old friend who kept my Hotmail email that I sent her telling her anyone who uses Google is just a pretentious bleep. And you know, now I have so many Google email addresses they tell me I can't have anymore. Like, you know, so I want to embrace, but I'm with you. You know, I even have my dad, I finally got my mom and dad to text about 10 years ago after my dad put his fist down and said, we do not text in this house. But even last week he was on his birthday. He was like, yeah, I got some people text me happy birthday. It's so impersonal and I'd rather you call. And it's like, you know, you're lucky I'm calling dad. Like I get it, but like, I don't have time for a phone call, but I have resisted along the way. And it's so funny. You and I have, you know, other than just, it's life. And so many experiences are shared, but like my first real use of email was I don't know how to describe it either. Tortured friendship thing when I was being a little too Jorah Mormont about it. But she was going to Vassar College and would send me electronic mail from vassar.edu.whatever. And I'd have to go to my friend's house. We had the internet. We had my dad's computer, but I couldn't access it there. And I had to go to like my friend's house and look for the emails. And he would be like, oh, God damn it. She doesn't love you. She doesn't love you. She does not love you, but I'll let you get on the email.
That's what my friend's dad should have added to this. Like, and you know, friends is fine. Just stick to that.
Yeah. Just stick with that. And I wish I had the maturity then that I'm still trying to get now. It's around the same time, give or take a couple of years. But yeah, that was the first like this, because I would send letters too. Right. And a good romantic letters. Great. Sure. But like it's around the time. Also, I worked at the radio station. Then we had our website and we had a stream. We were one of the first radio stations to stream some stuff. And that was all magic to me. And then I was a big fan of Whitney Matheson's blog in USA Today, Pop Candy. And she's great. I support her on Patreon still. She's doing some wonderful stuff. But she was a great little, it was the first time I was like, you can be a nerd in public type of article that she would, a weekly article. So I did that on the radio station, but I didn't know. I just would type out this thing, print it out and hand it to our tech guy and be like, put that on the website. And it's all around the same time, all around the same time.
Make be internet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I think I want to talk a little bit about how I came to accept and embrace it, but I think a lot of that experience about being resistant to change when you're young and then taking a step back and realizing what you're doing to yourself. I think so much of it for me was about fear. It was about fear of looking ignorant because I don't know how to work this stuff. I don't know how to communicate on it. But also just a deep, deep fear of being left out, which, you know, I had lots of issues of rejection, blah, 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 blah. And I think part of it is like, we didn't have a computer at home. My family did not have money for it. Right. We'd been briefly given other people's computers for like, try it out for a while and see what you can do on it. And my dad and mom were both like, but they're just slow to adopt technology. But there was this sort of, I think the fear of being left out in the fear of it actually being exciting and being vital and being a way to connect to people that you love or want to love or want to have love you. is actually going to be extremely exciting and compelling, and you're going to be left out of it.
Yeah.
And this vacuum of actually a typewriter is really cool and the old ways are better and I'm only one smart enough to see it. It comes in and it covers that fear, you know, and Yoda's right there of like, rejection of email is fear. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to typing all of your college papers on the typewriter, which is kind of cool, but mostly just really time consuming for you. And who have you shown what? It is so much about fear. And I think it's so much what we're talking about here is with Brian's great question is feeling older and looking back and laughing at how we couldn't possibly know how much the world would change. But we're all in it right now. It's all happening again. And it's going to be happening. These exact choices are going to be facing us again. They're facing us in this moment of where do we put Four Center content? What do we embrace? Mm-hmm. Why don't we embrace it? How are we making these decisions? Are we coming from a knee jerk place of fear and covering it up with salty anger and all that stuff?
Look, and it's important to change and grow. The fact that we're even doing video, I still contend that podcasts are podcasts, and this is a video podcast, and it's two different beasts, but we're doing it out the same. It's the same feed, right? And we had those battles, but after a while, it was like, cool, so that's great. Your principled stance has left you behind. Is that what you're okay with? Put a camera up, buddy. Like that was, I have to tell that to myself along the way, a lot of different points. And I think it's great to question, you know, the debate around this umbrella term of AI is something, you know, who gets control of it. These are all important things. And I think it's important to acknowledge, maybe even just give ourselves permission to be like, no, we're not being stubborn. We're just being concerned. But stubbornness and concern can maybe, I agree with you. It's a cover sometimes. And I was like that along the way. Very much. I would argue with my friend at work. I don't need your stupid smartphone. I don't need everything on there. You know, now my entire life is on here, of course, like everyone.
Yeah. And there are ups and downs. It's a tool. There are ups and downs. But, so yeah, for me, I really embraced the internet. I got that job at Kinko's in IDS Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota. They've talked about a lot, and we had free computer time. So suddenly, it wasn't this scary, isolating thing. I had a computer, and I could email people, and I started. I got a Hotmail address and started emailing a lot, and you know, it had friendly coworkers who were just like, "What do you like? Everything's on the internet," and. Yeah. This is interesting because for me, it was, there are a lot of things I loved that were obscure. And I maybe knew, not obscure, but I couldn't connect. Like Twin Peaks or old classic comedy, like Jerry Lewis. Those are two strong memories of like, I looked up Twin Peaks and Jerry Lewis because I knew two humans in real life who would talk to me about them. But I understood that there were more out there and like weird, very early GeoCities Jerry Lewis pages, and I've tried to find it. And there's an early Twin Peaks forum that had, I think, what turned out to be inaccurate, you know, information about what the third season would have been. So when I embraced it, it was about embracing connection. Exactly what became powerful and good about advances in communication is connection. So what I really try to think about and learn from that lesson is, it's not, are you for technology or are you against technology? It's how is it being used? Mm-hmm. And for me, particularly, you know, social media and the internet and everything is about communication. Is it going to bring people closer together or is it going to dehumanize us and make us feel farther apart? Mm-hmm. And like, my sociology paper was ridiculous and I don't need to smell an email, but there was a heart of concern that I still agree with, which is how is this going to help us connect? I was wrong about email. Obviously it helped me connect a lot. Now it's funny that email is the old thing and people are like, don't send me an email. Just for God's sakes, man. Don't send me an email.
Just DM me.
You know, look out. Do you file this up in your Rolodex? What? Like, no. So to me, I think about it all as connection. Because that's the value. Did you have a moment where it all clicked and you were like, actually, this is awesome. I was a grump.
Yeah. Early on, even though the Gmail thing came later and, you know, I was talking with our buddy Ken Plume, who's another oldster, talking about how I was, when every new fort when Facebook emerged, I was like, I'm not leaving MySpace. And then it was Twitter. I'd signed up for Twitter early, like 2008. I was like, this is stupid. And then Instagram showed up. And I remember I was like, this is now we're just sharing pictures. And then I saw, like, remember the early filters, if it looks like an old Polaroid or has the film reel. And I was like, well, that's cool. I want that. Now I'm going to sign up for that. But even before that, back in 2002, I started writing for a website called Tiny Mixtapes. I was writing monthly music columns. And I had, a reader who fan of my work, and he emailed me, and we connect, and we're still friends to this day. And it was the first time I was like you said, oh, this dude at the time lived thousands of miles away from me, but we connected over love of music and sharing songs. And that was an early reminder of there's someone out there that you can connect with. Now, later on, there's some darkness to that. There's some danger to that, but we can take the good, we can take the bad and find the best way forward. And a couple years ago, we swung through Burbank. We had lunch over 20 years later after we first exchanged emails about music.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, obviously some relationships are more personal and in person, but also just the idea that, like, remember when somebody moved away from the city that you lived in and there was no social media. It cost a lot of money to call long distance. And you're like, well, that person's gone. I know some relationships are in person and it is a big deal if you don't physically live in the same space. But in general, I'll never see Ted again is kind of gone, you know?
I am at the day of this recording, Monday, I'm have to head out to a going away lunch for my friend and former Four Center guest years ago, Joe Ruggiero, who's moving with his wife and their new son to Arizona. And, you know, I'm not gonna see him as much, obviously, and everything, but like there's a little less of that. It's sad, but I always say it's a new chapter beginning. And I text you, I don't even see you enough in town here. So I'll probably see you more in Arizona. Not that again, like I do like your caveat of, there's some relationships that are a little different, but this is a long held friendship that is going to be kept going strong because of all of these things that I once feared.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, kind of final thought is it's really funny to think about all this stuff and then think about the moment we're in now. I'm really having a lot of emotional time taken up by being frustrated with the state of social media. And I won't go on and on about it, but I feel like for all the ups and downs of Twitter in particular, that it was a great point of connection where it helped me grow a lot as a person to just hear so many different perspectives. And really hear it from a personal place. And I think I took for granted the amount of people that I was connected to on Twitter. And it feels like people are really dragging their feet to adopt any other option than Twitter. But Twitter, I'm on there for promotion. I just don't feel good about joking around there right now. So I'm not joking around. I'm still there for promotion. Four Center is still there for promotion. But even if I did want to joke around on Twitter, enough people have left that it's not the same, but Blue Sky, Threads, Mastodon, none of them have taken up. And I'm really in this moment where I spent so much emotional time every day thinking about the power of connection and how technology can be used to keep us closer together, to exchange ideas. And we're in a moment where it feels like a lot of technology is designed to limit communication with the algorithms and with, corporations having every motive to not have a human to speak to, of like, you just can't speak to a human for, the information superhighway to be of Google, everything getting harder to search because it's more like ads coming up and all that, Anyway. We're in a moment where I think we all have to really make choices about how can we embrace technology that connects and deny technology that dehumanizes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's reaching some kind of fever pitch, I think.
Yeah. I'm going to write a new sociology paper.
Now's
about how
time.
We should all go back to email.
Finish that monster. Put it on. Finish your monsters.
Yeah. Any final thoughts from you?
No, it's an ongoing journey, the battle of, you know, what you knew versus what you need to learn. And technology is definitely the way. I'm learning all the time. And yep. And I'd look back with laughter at myself at some of the stuff I've steadfastly stood against that are now just so part of my life.
Yep. Absolutely. Right there with you. I also remember the first person, I was an actor in a show I was directing who had, I think, an Android and was like, look, you pinch this and it just gets bigger and smaller. And then wherever you are, you just put in pizza and it tells you where pizza is.
Yeah.
And my life changed forever.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. All right. That is our big look at technology and how to find pizza. Thank you, everyone, for the great questions. Ken, you want to let people know where they can find us?
Yeah, here's where you can find us, as fractured as it is. We are still on Twitter, like Joseph said, Force Center Pod, to promote their vote. We are on Threads. We're on Instagram. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Not yet on Blue Sky. We are on Hive or whatever that was for a second. We're still there, so maybe we'll get on Blue Sky soon enough. Podcasts available in a lot of different spots. Just search. You'll find us. But even that changes over the years. Bye-bye, Stitcher. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And patreon.com/ForceCenter is where you can support us together, or you know what I meant. Follow me at Ken Napsok. I can't announce, I've been teasing it. Where's that damn photo? Where's that photo? Technology. I had to download this from a cloud drive. What is that? April 6th, Mark Ellis and I will be at the Rockwell in Boston. We also are on a show April 3rd with Justine Marino, but that is her show and her information. But April 6th, Boston, Mark Ellis and I at the Rockwell. Ticket information on his website or mine at kennapsock.com shortly. All right, you, sir.
Yeah, you can find me on most of the social media, particularly having fun on Blue Sky. I'm also on Threads and Mastodon. I don't even understand how I'm on Mastodon, but if you can find me, find me. Anyway, Instagram as well. And if you want to stay connected to what I'm doing, you can check out my weekly blog. It comes out every Tuesday. It's called Finish Your Monsters. It's about creative journeys in general, about trying to stay focused, make things into bite-sized goals that we can chomp down on and help encourage one another. If you're interested in that, you can just search Joseph Scrimshaw, Finish Your Monsters. And for now, Al Gore's internet will still show you how to subscribe to that blog. That is it. We have Aid the Cubes.